today I want to focus on startups. A very big chunk of your book entails and targets people who are just starting up, who are, you know, ideating entrepreneurial businesses and ventures. And I, first off, I think I would want to ask you, what is the general trend that you notice with startups?
So let's look at startups, not just in India, but across the whole world. It's a very exciting space, if I can use such a generic term. Young people, old people, you know, there's no age for startups, get a great idea and want to roll it out as a businessman.
Yeah.
And then they roll, then they take their risks, they take fussy opportunities, they build businesses.
Mm.
But I think there's a stark reality of a lot of startups.
Okay.
And that is that a lot of startups don't make it past the finish line.
Yeah.
And as we discussed today, I think we'll talk a little more about what can possibly go wrong in a startup.
Yeah.
So it's important for everyone to understand and recognize that getting an idea is not just the only reason that they will be able to create the first or one of the many unicorns of India.
Yeah.
It is staying the course, implementing their ideas, and
sustaining it. Yeah. You also said in your book that about 90% of startups are more likely to fail than to succeed. Why do you think that is?
So there are many reasons. First, of course, let's talk about why we never hear about startups that fail.
Yeah.
And the reason is very simple. You know, startups that are not making it are given a quiet burial.
Yeah.
And people move on.
Yeah.
And my, of course, advice to a lot of young entrepreneurs, young startup people, is that a failure must not be seen as the end of the world.
Yeah.
You have one failure, don't look at it as a business that's gone wrong, but look at it as an opportunity where you have acquired a lot of experience.
Hmm.
So that when you go out for your next startup,
you're better equipped.
You're better equipped to be able to handle all your challenges.
A lot of business ideas are formed on the basis of trends that are going on. So, for example, the couple of years I've seen a lot of selfies. It's a thing that came and took the world by storm.
Mm.
And a lot of companies came out with selfie sticks and everything that goes with it to get, you know, to help you get the perfect selfie.
Correct.
Do you think those sustain long term?
So there is a very, very old term called a Me Too product.
Okay.
Right? The person who pioneers a product,
yeah,
or a service,
hmm,
and sees through the implementation of that new idea for the product or service is generally a winner.
Okay.
And the biggest compliment that individual gets is if a dozen people start to copy that idea. And start to do or attempt to do the same thing, maybe slightly better.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of people who want to copy your ideas,
hmm,
to take your example of selfie sticks.
Yeah.
But a majority of the people who have copied have not put anything original in their idea.
Hmm.
And therefore, they don't have the ability to sustain themselves.
Yeah.
Having said that, if you look at Samsung telephones,
hmm,
or Samsung mobile phones,
yeah,
you know, I think they were much, much later than Apple,
yeah,
in the game,
yeah,
but they're giving a run for their money to Apple.
Yeah.
And if you go to the next generation, which are a lot of the Chinese phones,
hmm,
they came in much after Apple and Samsung.
Yeah, and they're still giving
and they dominate our market in India now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so the important thing is to get a great idea.
Hmm.
But even more important is to implement that idea and keep on innovating.
You also touch upon the fact that a lot of business ideas can be flawed.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that our viewers have a better sense, what do you mean by flawed?
So, let's take some interesting examples when I say a flawed business idea.
Mm.
For men,
yeah,
Gillette blades,
mm,
is something which almost every person uses, every,
mm,
male uses.
Mm.
Gillette, owned by Procter & Gamble,
yeah,
I think controls about 95 or 96% of the market.
Hmm.
Till very recently, if anyone attempted to say that I will build a better razor than Gillette, that would have been considered a flawed idea. Okay. Because there is someone who's such a dominant player, to take that person on is a difficult proposition. Then, of course, there are other examples where you've made some serious errors in the assumptions about the capability of your product or service. And, you know, in your own mind, you think that you can deliver the moon, when actually you're not able to deliver anything. So that is another example of a flawed business, idea. So, you know, the entrepreneur knows. And if he doesn't know, then within a few weeks or months of rolling out,
he would know
that this idea will not work. But if you keep on flogging a horse that is not going to move, then it's going to be a difficult proposition.
Just taking the conversation from Gillette, do you think it's also important to step away once you know your product is doing really well? Or to keep improving?
As an entrepreneur? I think so. Remember that the team that starts a business is not necessarily the right team that will see through the business to the next stage. And why is that? Because the team that starts the business has got a certain degree of passion. But when the business starts to get big, that is when a lot of systems and processes need to come into place. And I have seen that a lot of startup teams are not used to processes and things because they're used to functioning in their very maverick style of functioning. You know, work 20 hours a day, do everything that's there in the office. So the entrepreneur and the management team of the entrepreneur have to reinvent themselves once the teams, once the business starts to get larger.
Do you think delegation is an important process?
Absolutely. Delegation is very critical. Because the more one individual or a group of individuals try to handle all the time, the less time they will have to be able to look forward, to strategize, and to grow the company.
You know, talking about growing the company, there are two things that can happen. Either you collect enough and adequate funds to start up and then get on with it, or you find an investor who will then take your company and help you take it forward. What would you think is the better way to go? Or is it conditional?
There is always a risk associated with bringing an outside investor. Because if you bring in an outside investor too early, you run the risk of diluting your own shareholding so quickly that you know, before your idea is successful, you may not be in full control of your own company. So therefore, I always tell a lot of young entrepreneurs that try and put whatever money you have, raise money from friends and family, then go to angel investors, you know, who will put small sums of money. Start doing your business, start rolling out whatever you want to do, and only approach private equity at a much later stage, because that is where you are now bringing an outsider into your company. And the outsider who comes into your company, his primary interest is to make money with money. And while the private equity investor will support you, he is accountable to his shareholders to see what returns he's getting on the money that he's investing in your company.
Plus, investors and angel investors, they probably don't share the same spirit and passion as the entrepreneur who is creating something.
They can never do that. Because they're, remember, they're in the business of making money. And therefore, their passion is the business they are in. They are not in your business.
Just to get returns is their primary motive.
Absolutely.
Do you also think that management teams, you spoke about scaling up and you spoke about the importance of understanding when and what teams to bring in, considering the business is growing. Do you think management teams play a very crucial role?
I agree. They, you know, it's important to have a good management team. But it's also important to make sure that you get the right team at the right time. I have seen people at two extremes. There are entrepreneurs who don't delegate at all, and we spoke about delegation a few minutes ago. And I've also seen entrepreneurs who go and load up top management with so many senior people that all the money they raise, they end up with paying salaries. So therefore, and also remember, when professionals come into your team, one, they're expensive, but at the same time, there's also the first entry of politics within your organization. So you have to be careful, and you have to strike a very careful balance because of when you want to bring good people in and how much you want to delegate. Having said that, it is important to make sure that the people you get, irrespective of whether it's one, two, three, or four, the people you get must be of a very high caliber.
Okay.
You know, get the right person, pay them as much as they are looking for, either in the form of money or in the form of stocks or in the form of a profit share or whatever you want to do. But get in people who you would aspire to have in your company, rather than bring someone in simply because the individual happens to be there or is a person who you can afford to get.
Okay. When we talk about management companies, all of this is obviously linked with the point of scaling up. You need to bring more people in, more processes in, as ventures begin to scale up and increase. What do you think is so tricky about scaling up?
So scaling up is a subject that I've loved to talk about. When I was scaling up Guardian, the standard question I would be asked was, when will you be pan-India?
Okay.
And I used to ask them, why do I have to be pan-India? Well, they said, because, you know, it must be a national brand. I said, but the national capital region that I've started in, that has 23 million people, which is more than the size of Australia. Right? So therefore, why do I have to try and scale up and be in a place which I'm not familiar with? So one mistake that a lot of entrepreneurs make is they want to go into areas they're not comfortable with before their organization is ready. So therefore, as you begin to start increasing, it's important first to make sure that you have the ability to manage multiple locations, right? If they've got one office, you want to open a second office. As the entrepreneur, you can't be in every place. So therefore, you need a good set of managers who you trust and who you've delegated to, who can manage phase two of your business, which is the first scaling up that they should do. And then you have to start replicating it every time you want to open a new office or a new location. So scaling up is good because scaling up helps you grow up your business and, you know, expand exponentially. But you must have the capability to be able to handle the scaling up. You need to have the right kind of people. And more than anything else, you need very strong control systems. Because for the first time, things are going to be happening which are beyond the entrepreneur's vision physically. The entrepreneur can't see what's happening in Dehradun or in Chennai or in Bangalore, and I'm just using these names as examples. But wherever you wish to go, scaling up is good, but do it carefully.
And funny thing, we spoke about following your Garden of Detail framework in our last episode also. How do you gauge this? How do you gauge whether my company is ready or not, whether I am ready or not to scale up, whether it is time or not time?
I think that's a very difficult assessment to make.
Do you think it's instinctive?
Partly instinctive. You know, the entrepreneur knows that, you know, now I'm in a position where I think I've saturated the amount of market share I can take in my current market. You know, I believe that now I'm ready to go to Bombay instead of just staying in Delhi. So therefore, as an entrepreneur, we decide, okay, let me go to Bombay. Once I'm there, the challenges that I have faced in Delhi will be very similar to the new market. But it's in an unfamiliar market. Every market has its own set of assumptions.
Its own set of people.
So I'll give you an example. When we went into Bombay or Mumbai, the first thing we realized, which we did not know, and this was after a few of our shops were shut down, etc., that all our signages had to be in Marathi. So it took us a few months to figure out these are local requirements.
Yeah.
So while when you do a business, your provident fund and hiring of people and contracts and sending your goods and everything else, that is pretty much standard across our whole country.
Yeah.
But there are certain local requirements which we had to learn.
Yeah.
And that can be a fairly expensive proposition.
But do you think it can be avoided if you do the research beforehand, or there are still going to be some things that...
You can avoid some pitfalls,
yeah,
but there will be lots of potholes in the road that you're going to hit. And the important thing is not to lose your sanity when you get hit these kind of potholes or these kind of walls, but to keep going.
Okay.
Because no challenge can be insurmountable.
Yeah.
You know, yes, it can give you a setback of a few hours, few days, few weeks.
A few dollars.
Well, actually, every setback converts into dollars and cents. But I think the resilience that an entrepreneur needs to have is probably incomparable.
But that, I think that resilience only comes if you're truly passionate.
Correct.
And you want to see it through.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. On a concluding note, we have discussed a lot of things, the management team, scaling up, innovation, ideation. What would you deem as the major reason for failure? If there was one thing that makes or breaks your entire vision, if there is ever such a thing, what would you think that would be?
So we've spoken about many, many parameters that go into the success of a business. But I have, based on hundreds of companies that I have worked with or financed as an angel investor, I think the single most important challenge is when companies run out of money.
Okay.
And the entrepreneur does not plan ahead and then starts to scramble when he sees that the amount of money left in the bank is only for 1 month or for 2 months or 3 months. Then starts to panic. And as I think we've discussed earlier, the best time to raise money is when you have enough money in the bank, rather than when you've run out of money and then you are scrambling trying to raise money. So I think the single most important reason for a startup hitting roadblocks is being inadequately funded.
Okay. And if there was a person who found himself to be in such a situation, in the middle of their career graph, middle of their business doing really, really well, and now they've run out of money, what do you think they should do?
The first and most important thing is to figure out a way to raise money.
Yeah.
Because not being able to raise money means that you have to give up your dream.
Yeah.
You started off as an entrepreneur, you've burnt the candle at both ends, worked 24 hours a day, reached where you are, achieved a reasonable measure of success. And because you haven't planned your cash flows well, it would be unfortunate that you have to lose your business. So therefore, the first thing would be to try and figure out a way to get money into your business. If that doesn't happen, then a better option would be to try and find a buyer for your business, so that you may not be able to continue with the business, but at least your business will continue to survive.
It will at least thrive.
Yeah.
Considering that we're talking about thriving, do you think some people are deluded to not recognize that they're having a problem with their finances?
Oh, all the time. All the time. Most of us live in hope, of course.
Yes.
You know, because something good is going to happen to us.
It will all work out.
It will all work out. But at the back of our minds, we all know on any subject, whether we're being realistic or not. And, our friends may keep telling us, don't worry, something good will happen.
Yeah.
Our families may tell us. But at the back of our minds, we know that it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So the sooner, as an entrepreneur, we accept that reality and become more hard-headed about how to tackle the problem, we will be better off, rather than reach a situation where we've been deluding ourselves with something will happen, or someone up there is going to look down upon me and rain on
and
all the dollars and cents, and I'll have all the money in the world, etc. That doesn't happen.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ashwarya.
This is very interesting. We will be back with another episode that gives a very good overview on learnings for a startup entrepreneur. Stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.